The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast, joined by Pete and Steve. You're all right, lads. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
It hasn't been a happy New Year for the Royals, has it? Harry is stirring up such a storm of crap, isn't he? I mean, do you know what made me laugh, though? What's your thoughts on that? Do you have any thoughts on it? Is it annoying you? Are you in tune into it at all?
Sorry, Paddy's just joined the call.
Paddy's just joined. He's on video.
He's on video. That's not
hi, guys.
Half naked. I'll screenshot that and I'll use it as the as a cover. Oh, he's gone there.
He's off there. There we go.
I use it as a cover pick for Audible and Spotify and all that stuff, so they can see what a fine figure of a man Paddy is.
Yeah.
Are you about? Go on.
Just in time for Paddy's comment on the Royals. I think he's the best person.
You know, I'm just saying, Pad, it's Happy New Year and everything, but apparently officially you're not meant to say that now. It's going to end on the 6th,
right.
That is. Down with the Christmas tree
right.
And stuff. But I was saying the Royals haven't had a good start of the year. They were Harry. That is a guaranteed number one bestseller. Spare, it's called. Spare A to the throne. But are you tuning into that, Pad, or Pete and Steve? Are you watching any of that? Is it capturing your imagination or not?
Couldn't give a monkeys.
Right.
I'm not really watching it, but you can't really avoid it, can you? It's popping up everywhere. But he's going to great lengths to sell a book, isn't he? Like he's digging in up everything. But
unbelievable.
It seems.
I think there are details here that no one needs to know, right? Like
right, exactly.
Keep it to yourself.
So what I found quite amusing, right, is that all these revelations he's really revealed, right? And Kensington Palace and Buckingham Palace hasn't replied to any of them, and yet the Taliban have. The Taliban are more communicative than Kensington Palace and Buckingham Palace. You know, they've actually waded in saying, no, you shouldn't say you've killed 25 people because they're all humans, you know. They're seeming like a lot more sympathetic, you know, saying everyone's a soldier in combat. It should all be respected, the Taliban have said in some way. But Kensington Palace and Buckingham Palace hasn't said a word. It's like, that's who you're dealing with. It's amazing, really, but here we are.
Paddy's more of a fan of the Taliban, actually, than the royal family.
It's a question there about ruling parties' classes. You know, they're both unelected, aren't they, really? But the Taliban are more communicative. That's amazing, really. But anyway, listen, I just want to quick talk about the parents here. It's a bit of a downer, but I've had a lot of emails and people asking and saying, how are you? So my mother, she's been going through dementia for a long time, and it was at the stage where, she literally, no quality of life, and so she passed away just before Christmas. And to be honest, I mean, you know, she wouldn't want to have lived like that. You know, she was an active lady. She's achieved highly in sport. She's in the Welsh netball team. She won her golf championship 6 times on a trot. She was in the county championship. You know, she did loads of things. So she was very active in her time. But to see her, dementia is a horrible disease, horrible. And you realise, you know, it's not the way you want to live life. I've told Megan, I said, do you know what my benchmark is, Meg? I love stocks and shares. As long as I can keep doing that, I don't care if I'm 90 stone, you know, and I can't move from my chair. If my mind's active and I can still buy and sell stocks and shares, I'm good to go.
I think she might have an issue with that.
Yeah, she may push me out long before 90 stone appears. But I said, you know, I said, if the benchmark is this, I said, listen, if I can't wipe my own backside, I shouldn't be here. If I've not got the cognitive skills to actually do that, take me away. That's it. Wheel me off a cliff or anything. And I think that's the basis. The mind is so important, isn't it? You know, amongst anything else. If you've got your mind, you've got everything. You can communicate, you can do all that. But without that, it's no good. But it does put it into this sort of, perspective, sort of life, and the temporary nature of everything. You know, everything at all. And you appreciate it. And even now, my father and mother, I've never met a couple like them who loved each other so much. They've always been in love. And he spent every day pretty much going to, you know, see her every single day. And yet him now, his health has taken a turn for the worse. The reason why my mother went into care is because my father had a stroke dealing, you know, managing her. And he now is in a horrible situation where, he's a workaholic, my father. You know, one day he had off a week pretty much, and he was up at 7:30 playing golf on a Sunday. That was his week, you know, and he works long hours. Now he's had like CT scans for cancer. It looks like he's in his lungs, in his liver. We got biopsy. And he literally is having problems breathing, walking, not eating a lot. And you think, bloody hell, this is a shitstorm, you know? And we're even fearful. You know, my mother's funeral is, he's that bad. We're hoping he'll get to the funeral. He's that bad. And I'm thinking, this is an awful situation to be in. You realise it does make you appreciate what you have. And you think at the end of it, at the end of the day, you know, we talk about stocks and shares a lot and money and all that stuff, but it is health. You know, if you haven't got that, you haven't got anything. That's the most valuable thing you have, is your health, isn't it? You know, beyond anything else. You know, because when that starts to go, it doesn't matter how much money you've got, doesn't matter what car you've got or house you've got, you haven't got anything. You know?
And there's no way, like, my dad died last year, and, like, you, no matter what your relationship is with them, you assess your own mortality when that happens, don't you? It's very close. And you start thinking about, right, okay, we're in our, you know, you're in your 50s, we're in our 40s.
Yeah.
Like, you start to think about your own life and the choices you're making. And obviously, there's no surprise that at this point in lots of people's lives, they start changing tack, or they start changing career, or they'll, you know, move house, or they'll, you know, that is such a momentous point in everyone's life when a parent dies that you then start to assess the rest of your life and make decisions based on that. And yeah, you start prioritizing health and you start prioritizing happiness, and you may turn your back on that stressful job and start thinking about things that you enjoy instead.
Exactly, because there's a famous quote someone said, it's a salary is something they pay you to make you forget your dreams, you know? And it is that, because, you know, when you're sensible, when you're younger, but you're trying to be a bit sensible and you get a job. I'm not saying everyone should follow their dream, whatever it is, but I'm not saying that. But I mean, you should sort of, you know, at least apportion a bit of your time to achieving that dream or doing something you really enjoy. Because if you're just miserable in your job, and I always say, you can break your life down into three sections, pretty much. A third of your life, you're sleeping. Most people, if you have a good sleep, you enjoy that. It doesn't matter. So basically, you know, your entire life, 50% of your life is working, pretty much, as conscious life, and 50% is free time. So you can enjoy your free time, pretty much, but if you don't enjoy your job or what you do, then half your conscious life, you're not enjoying yourself. So, you know, if you're not enjoying it, I'm not saying jump out of your job, but find something that ticks your boxes in some way, because, you know, it's life. That's half your life, you know, so it's very important. But yeah, you do question everything, and you rely on everything. And do you know what? Like, you know, financially on the market here, I've had a crap 12 months, awful 12 months. But what it's made me do, and point in life, you sort of look back and start thinking about things. And I've had a lot of time over the last, you know, a few weeks looking at things. And I decided. I remember about 5 years back, I sent out a spreadsheet, and it had sort of a portfolio construction, and it had three different colours in it. And the one was like, you know, big cap stocks, one was mid caps, one was small caps, and it's diversified and a fund as well. And so I've just sent out an email actually to the membership club saying, webinars on a Wednesday. You guys don't even watch the webinars. Every webinar, I basically, every week now, I show first and foremost what I'm holding. And my fund, my portfolio's changed dramatically over the last 3 to 6 months. Dramatically. I now got 65% cash.
Wow.
And that's because
I watched it this week.
Well done,
Steve.
Well, the people that they do watch. Thank you very much. But I sent an email saying, this week going forward, I'm going to be more focused on realigning my portfolio to a diversified portfolio. Because I did very well in microcaps. You know, in an era of very low interest rates, cheap money. You know, you tend to get loss-making companies there who need to raise money do very well because they're hope high potential. I'm not going to get rid of that side of portfolio, but I mean, I'm going to not, you know, overload on that side, because I realise, you know, they rally very hard, but they sell off very hard. They will recover. It may take a bit longer this time, I think. I'm not sure. I'm just guessing here, because the cost of capital is not cheap. And so most of my focus will now be on, you know, highly cash-generative, profitable stocks. I will have, and I think, you know, a fund should be your biggest holding. If you are not a full-time investor, a fund should be your biggest holding. It should be at least twice the size of your next biggest holding, I believe. So that's going forward. But yeah, and so on the webinar every week now, I'll be looking at, so guys, feel free to tune into this, okay? But every week, I'll be looking at different companies. That but put it this way, in the last 3 to 6 months, I've sent this email out now, I've made 5 investments based on a strategy that have been evolving for a long time. It's not a huge removal from the last strategy, it's just I've fine-tuned it. And I'm in profit on those 5 stocks. I've sold one out at a profit, I still hold 4 that are in profit. And that's because, simple thing of, just being a bit more focused on quality, but also very important momentum. It's huge, and I've talked about this a couple of times over the last, in fact, I mean, I know a couple of you have been on the podcast last few weeks, last few months, but I mentioned this to Steve before, about, you know, moving average and all that. Very important, the stock, not only fundamentally strong, but is in a starting up trend. And there's many, many reasons for this, but essentially, you know, fallers attract sellers, buyers attract, risers attract buyers. And that has transformed my portfolio pretty much. I mean, I don't have massive positions in these companies because I've been hit massively over the last 18 months, and so I'm edging in, and even that, scaling in. I've even done a spreadsheet for scaling in, and I've argued about in a bull market, right, you're okay to average down because asset prices are rising, generally, you know, things will rise. In a bear market, it's a very dangerous high-risk strategy. You're better off averaging up, and that means only exposing yourself or increasing your exposure to rising share prices. And that way, and you don't overexpose unless the share price rises. I mean, don't overexpose anyway. But you don't, you know, increase exposure unless the share price is rising. So if a share price doesn't perform, you don't keep adding money to it, because that can be a very tricky situation. And then you, what happens is you find your portfolio is more leveraged to your winners, less leveraged to your losers. So you don't put more capital into falling share prices. So it's a couple of things I've done that I've found that is working. And I think I'm now sort of confident. I'm at 5 out of 5 hit rate on those companies. That going forward, I'll be doing that. So I'll be looking at, let me just get a note up here.
So which ones are going up then?
So hang on a sec. So I literally rearranged my entire sort of the way I look at things. Even on start with a trading view, for example, I have sort of sections there into companies where I put big caps, mid caps, small caps, micro caps. I'm also being every week in the podcast I'll be looking big and mid caps. One from that section that are highly cash generative, dividend paying, starting an uptrend. Then I look at small caps. When I'm talking about mid caps to big caps, I don't want 500 million plus market cap. And then small caps, and that's pretty much sort of below 500 million. I'm also looking at micro caps in the same that they've got to be an uptrend, they've got to be fundamentally good. Micro caps are sub 100 million. And I'm also looking at a hope pipe potential stock every week. These are companies that I think, not just rubbish companies, but have decent potential. They have plenty of cash. That's very important in this environment. When cost of capital is expensive, companies not generating their own cash find other people's cash they have to borrow very expensive. And so it's not on their terms. But they've got to have, so these hope pipe potentials have to have plenty of cash, but very decent potential going forward. And not just based on, rampers on Twitter or something, but, they are getting contracts. It looks like they're in a hot sector. And it could be a very good company, but also
that then though, does that not include some of the stocks that you were previously in?
I still hold. I mean, for example, if I look at this spreadsheet I've got here, right? So I break it down into basically 1, 2, 3, 4 colours. The green colour at the top is the big mid caps, highly cash generative, and the maximum exposure I put to one of those is 10% each. So I have 3 of those pretty much. Small caps, again, growth, operational profitability, that's in the blue colour. They're 100 million to 500 million market cap. Again, 10% maximum exposure on each of those. So first and foremost, 60% of my portfolio will be in profitable, almost dividend-paying stocks, but some of those big caps, like I said, I've talked about this previously. If you look at the house builders at the moment, like Persimmon, an amazing company. I mean, we're talking about here, and I mentioned this before to Steve, these are highly successful, proven businesses. But they've fallen by 50%. They're paying like a 7, 8, 9% dividend. They're going to get back to where they were, over the next few years. As interest rates come down, they will. So this is the difference between investing in, companies you hope will be brilliant businesses against companies who know are brilliant businesses but will take the knock, you know, in the last few months. So that's why.
Are they a brilliant business? Didn't they fall because they were doing really
quality
badly?
Quality of houses, yeah.
No, Persimmon now. Well, I mean, well, all the house builders, they've had a reconstruction. They're now on 5-star sort of ratings and reviews, haven't they? They've re-changed. But I mean, I'm talking about the margins of these companies are excellent. They're operating margins of 20% plus. They've got no debt. They are chucking out millions and billions in cash. You know, so they are relatively safe companies that have taken a knock. They will get back to those levels in the next few years. And then sort of in the micro-cap space, the small cap is well below that. The first, you know, 60% of my portfolio will be those kind of companies. Sort of big cap, mid cap, small cap. And then micro-cap, these are companies that are EBITDA profitable going forward and sort of that. I do hold some of those, of course, and I still believe in them. I'm like, XP factories in there, I'm not going to get rid of that. I believe they have an excellent, you know, business rolling out, and I believe that will become a good business, you know. Also, Truefin's in there as well. I think that will be an excellent business. So there's kind of, and then below that, you have the Hope Pipe potential stocks, which are, again, not yet generating anything, but I'd only those two layers there, microcaps and the Hope Pipe potential. Maximum exposure to those, 5% each, maximum, because they have the potential anyway to double, triple, and so take a bit more of your portfolio. But that was one of the problems I had. When the sort of uptrend changed, I was over-leveraged to companies that are, you know, illiquid, pretty much, and I couldn't really get out of it because it would just tank the stock in a big way. I couldn't get out of and the good thing is about the bigger cap companies, you know, like if you look at Persimmon, they're doing, you know, their daily share trades average volume is worth millions, so you can buy and sell as much as you want of that pretty much on a daily basis. So if it goes wrong,
with this spreadsheet, did you say you're sharing that each week on the webinar?
I did it last week, but I also...
I'm going to watch that one then.
Okay. But
didn't watch already.
Yeah.
I've just been a bit busy, Pad, but I will make a point in watching it.
Yeah.
That's my New Year's resolution. Watch the
webinar. Always busy, Pete.
Well, yeah, busy guy.
But also what I say to people is like, well, you said something different in a couple of months. I'm evolving all the time. What I say and what I do, two different things, but hopefully they're quite closely aligned, you know? I may change my mind because I've been tinkering around with this portfolio makeup quite a bit. But I mean, you know, like I said, first thing I do on the webinar is pretty much show my holdings. That's what I'm doing, pretty much, you know? So, but it's aligned to what I'm thinking as well. But I just think going forward now, you have the potential to earn very good, you know, capital upside, the share price going up in these big companies. Yep. That are recovering, plus an income.
A dividend.
Yeah. And even if you go, like, buy now, and in fact, don't buy now because some of the house builders are not in an uptrend yet. They're still bumping along the bottoms, and they could be there for another 6 months. I mean, that's another thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't allocate your capital. I mean, they don't pay dividends. I think interim dividends on most companies, these companies are in March. So if you want to get, you know, a little bit of dividend, fair enough. But I mean, you know, no point being a bit more efficient with capital, saying, I'm not going to invest in this company until it starts showing up trend, because there's no point just having money just sitting there.
Yeah.
You know, So.
I mean, I've literally been the classic passive investor of the past 6 months, probably. Yeah, I don't think I've bought or sold anything. I've just sat there, cried a little bit.
Watched it go down.
Quite a bit more.
Do you know what? On this week's webinar, I said, it's funny how people say you can't spot a bear market happening. You can do it. And looking back, in hindsight, it's a wonderful thing, but I showed three different indices, okay, and just look at the moving averages. And they were all rolling over. They're rolling over, I think, November last year, pretty much. And in fact, AIM started rolling over in September last year. And even if you looked at the basic 200-day, 50-day moving average, it crossed back in then. And you realise that's the start of a downtrend. And we should start exiting then. And if you look at individual companies, it had been the same. And so but you really have to detach the emotion of thinking a company's going to go to the moon and realising what the market's saying and the volume's saying. Because it's all about, all it comes down to is volume. It's buy and sell volume, you know, supply and demand of shares. When the supply starts going up for some reason, that's reflected in the share price. And then on a smoother level, that's reflected in the moving averages, which are a reflection of the share price. Share price on a daily basis is more volatile, but those moving averages smooth it out, and you can see an average of what's happening. And so if you just pay attention to that, so now we're looking at companies that are fundamentally good, but the moving averages and trends are moving upwards, Then I get in. When do you get out? When they start rolling over again. Regardless of how well you think the business is doing, the market, the supply and demand of shares is such that it's saying it's not working. Something's going wrong here, you know? So, yeah.
My take on the whole thing has been like, you either do exactly what you're doing there and you're being very active. You're really then trying to look at how to recover certain, well, your portfolio as a whole. Or, you know, the thing I've got to get over this, but, you know, I just keep thinking back, you know, May 21, June 21, all-time high portfolio. And I just think about
those sort of days.
And I've got to stop thinking about it, but it plays on my mind. I'm like, why didn't I sell? But you've just got to get
We talked about it as well, didn't we? Jokingly. Yeah, I think we said, right,
yeah,
then
we should sell.
That's funny. But next time we say that, we should probably go, no, actually, should we
do it?
Yeah. Pat, honestly, you don't need to think. I mean, honestly, if you look at the webinar, I did post on a thing. Three different. I did the FTSE 250. I looked at the AIM All Share. I looked at the S&P 500. The moving averages were telling you back then. Essentially, we're now starting.
This is why I said it.
Yeah. This is
exactly.
You all ignored me.
And
you
so
told me
we poo-pooed it. Even if you think in your gut feeling, I'm at an all-time high year. Let's take some off. You know, it may go. You find the last few months of a bull market. Really rally. And so you may not want to miss out on that. And the moving average will tell you that. You'll say, well, listen, there's something's going wrong here. It's not working out. But
I think the thing for me then is that where I am now with my portfolio, I look at it and go, I don't think there are that many dogs in the portfolio. I don't think that any of them are going to the moon either. But I think some of them are some really, really good underlying businesses there that have just been hammered.
Yeah.
And all right, they are predominantly sort of hype and hope perhaps, and they do need momentum behind them. But take Plarium, for example. I'm still in there. It's about probably 20% of my portfolio still. The FDA approval was a brilliant bit of news. That's fantastic. It rose. It's now slipped back down. But you look at it and go, I shouldn't worry about that. The fear was the FDA approval. Bloody hell, if that hadn't come in when it did, that would have lost 50% in a day, wouldn't it? That would have if we got another delay this week or whatever, that would have just plummeted. Whereas we should be looking at it and go, thank God it didn't do that. We've got the FDA approval. It's now in the lap of the gods, perhaps, because we've got to see the sales, we've got to understand the commercialization of it all, the funding of it, how's that all going to work, and to get an idea of the valuation, because it's about 100 million market cap, you know, is that crazy? We talked before about this could be a $1 billion company, you know, so who knows? But you look at that, I don't want to get rid of that now, because the biggest fear is over. There's still a massive unknown, or lots of unknowns, but I don't want to sell it. I want to hold on to it. And
is there anything else that's in front that could stand in the way of that, Justin? Or is come to us now with a plan of like the next 18 months, two years or whatever?
Well, I did talk about Blair on the webinar, and someone else said,
I watched that.
Yeah, and someone said, what's happened with the price action? And I said, it's really odd because the share price is now exactly where it was pre-FDA approval.
Yeah, I know, which is ridiculous.
Nuts. And so that shows the sentiment of the market at the moment. Really does, because that rallied by 50% on the day. You know, it went to sort of 84 pence. It opened at 60 pence, 84 pence, and now it's back down at 50 pence. And so you've got people there just taking profit where they can because they're worried about the markets, worried going forward. But, you know, and I did say, I totally believe, and they say they are a pioneer in this technology. And they can pick up things that nothing else, MRIs can't pick up now. And it's additive to MRIs. So if you're an MRI manufacturer, what's your thought process now? There's a technology out there we can add to our machine that will make it better than any other machine out there. So in my mind, nothing's a no-brainer. Of course it's not. But I don't know what the process is now, but I'm assuming they may get, like I said, you've got over 100 peer-reviewed papers on this from really, you know, well-renowned, you know, world-renowned sort of centres like, you know, Oxford University and all that stuff. So, yeah, I just do see this as the best-in-class tech. And so I think in this environment, so I wouldn't be surprised to see some kind of a deal going on with a manufacturer or something like that, or something's going to happen. You don't sit there. You can't.
No, exactly.
You know, if you're spending, like America alone in this area, spending $150 billion a year in this area, right? And like I said,
for that money, it's just an acquisition. It's like it's Yeah, money down the back of a sofa, isn't it, for a pharmaceutical company?
Well, also the guy on the board last time, his bit of kit last time was acquired for $400 million or something like that. And he believes this is better than that, the last act. So, yeah, the huge potential for Polarian, I think. And the good thing is, I mean, people get worried about the share price and rally out. I mean, they did, let's look at the cash they've got. They got $22 million at the end of June, $22 million in cash. They did burn sort of 6.6 for that 6 months. From seeing a bit of cost, but I think going forward,
but would they necessarily have to come to the market for funding because they've got FDA approval now? There's other ways of raising cash, isn't there? Or
well, I assume, if they could do a deal with a manufacturer, there'd be the manufacturer, I assume, would for a part, I don't know, a revenue share or whatever. I don't know how it would work, but in some way there could be, I'm assuming, funding. There's other, put it this way, there's other options that they now have commercial license, to commercialize this across the US. And do you know what? And next, it'll be the EU and then the Far East and the Middle East, all that stuff. So
how easy will they come, the EU, UK and rest of the, like those kind of licenses? I guess it's quite easy after the FDA.
Well, they say the FDA is the benchmark, and they say that's but they still have to apply, of course. And there's certain drugs that don't get passed in America, they get passed in the EU or vice versa, but whatever, yeah, but I think.
But
the biggest worry about the biggest worry about Polarium and the reason why FDA didn't give it approval was because they changed manufacturer. Now they had to prove that the stuff they were making, the kit they were making, was exactly the same from the new manufacturer. So it wasn't the inert noble gas of xenon. That wasn't the problem because that's used widely anyway. So I just think. I don't know. I'd expect some kind of big, one of the scanners manufacturers deal with them, and funding would be provided via that route, probably. That's the ideal thing, and I can't see why it wouldn't happen. Because if you go in a health situation, and the reason why you can't prevent diseases is because you haven't got the tech, but there's tech available, then why wouldn't you acquire that? You can't just say to someone, our tech's not up to it. I've never heard a doctor say that in my life, sorry, we haven't got the tech. So we could have it tech, but they won't pay for it. But they will pay for it. There's lots of money in healthcare, so they will pay for it.
I don't know, in this day and age, it's probably a little bit different.
But you'd be surprised how much they spend on PPE. It's like, they fund the money for that. Yeah.
Well, but also the competition, like this unique in its technology, isn't it, in terms of what it does. So, there's a lot of potential. To answer Paddy's question, though, what could cause a massive drop in the share price now, like a really big, what's going to really cause like a 20, 30, 40%? Like if there's not going to be, what could cause that now? And if there's not going to be anything like that, I'm like, well, it's time to top up because it's
factory
an opportunity.
Burns down.
Or the machines start exploding or something. Yeah.
I don't know. But if you're at 20%, I wouldn't top up. Honestly, I wouldn't. I just wait because there's always that. You never know.
The FOMO is strong. Having been on things like Argo blockchain,
that's transformational. If they do a big deal in there, 20% will still move your portfolio, won't it? If it doubles here, that's 40% of your portfolio.
25% will move it more.
Exactly. Well, how much more can you add? Without thing is, part of why I've changed my portfolio construction and will change it is because when you leverage to one company, you're almost a little bit nervous. Every bit of news comes out in that area, that sector, and I don't want to be in that situation. But I want to be in a situation where if one takes a hit, it doesn't really matter too much. But they can, So I just think at the moment, if you're talking about world class technology. Then 100 million market cap is not expensive, really. It's not. If you look at the big manufacturers of these MRI scanners, like GE and all that, most of the board have connections. Philips, Siemens. Yeah. Most of the board have connections with all these companies. So it's
my thing that I suppose you could say I'm lazy is that I know the company, I know the history, I feel more comfortable with my risk there. Maybe than going into some new companies where I need to start researching and learning and understand the whole thing and all that. I'm just being lazy, but I kind of go, no, I'd rather lump in another 5%.
I just research.
I will.
Don't think you're being lazy, because I think certainly from my point of view, I'm not going to go down the strategy that you're doing, just because I just haven't got the time.
And
like for me, where I am at the moment, and I think I'm all right with my stocks, so probably need to check over them. But like, and I think,
it's like surprising to check over them.
You're open minded.
What the check's going to be?
Kangaroo Resources is in there now. Where's that come from? They changed his name 5 times.
I got a couple of those. But a couple of those
Salt Lake
probably
Potash or whatever. Yeah.
But those ones, I've only got about £20 in them, because they've literally got -99.99999%, which are never recovering. But I can't sell them. But the majority of where my money is, although they are down, I think most of my big stocks are like down 50-60%.
And it's just like, fine, Steve. I think they're all okay. They're all down like 80%.
But 17 that are like, yeah.
Yeah. But do you know what, though? I mean, those stocks, I said, you know, I had, when I talk about that sort of, you know, spreadsheet within the last two, is it a light red and there's a dark red of hope, high potential, knowing that's the colour coordination there is for risk, colour coding is for risk, you know? And like I said, pretty much all my stocks were in those two red bands. And that's, for me, you know, I did very well on that, but you know, the market's changed a little bit. And I just want to be a bit more balanced and not just reliant on one stock. But for example, Plarium is a perfect example of a hope pipe potential stock. And I don't mean that I mean that has an ability to really rally, but it also genuinely has amazing technology. So when I'm talking about hope pipe potential, I'm not talking about resource stocks or something like that may strike oil or something, and nothing like that. I'm talking about almost tech companies like that, you know, health tech, or in that kind of area that you know are, you know, doing well. They have game-changing technology. Those are the hope high potential stocks I'm talking about, which I think, you know, even if you maximum 5%, it can transform your portfolio because in double, triple, quadruple, you know, so it have the potential to take up 20, 30, 40% of your portfolio, and then you can top slice and stuff. But I was over-leveraged to that. And I mean, in fact, Plarium not so much because they're quite liquid, but, you know, smaller companies like that. And so I'm just rebalancing a bit. Yeah, but see, the good thing is about you, like I said, and I say this, you know, if you are, you know, if you're not in a full-time investor, and most people listen to this are not, then your biggest holding should be a fund. And I think, Steve, you've got 40% in a fund, haven't you? So, I mean,
but the only reason, I know you were talking about that on the webinar about me having 40%. The only reason my fund is 40% is because of all the other stocks. Yeah. It's dropped so low, and that one actually hasn't dropped, really. So it's not, I've purposely put 40% in, you know. Go back to, like I said, back 2021 when you said we were on our
side. Started off as 5%.
Exactly. So I wouldn't look at that as a good thing. That's quite a bad thing, that my fund has got to 40%.
Don't beat yourself up, Steve. It's very strategic. Well done.
But if you do, like, I know you don't like to do regular amounts, but literally regular amounts, you know, monthly, small amounts. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, the kind of money you'd put away in your bank account. Just rather than leaving it in a bank account, just put it into a massive fund. Like, that was a,
I know, and I'm exactly what I'm doing now.
Yeah, yeah. Life Strategy Fund, for example, right? You can't get more diversified than that. It's very low cost. This is the Vanguard Life Strategy. It's very low cost, 0.22% ongoing charges. You know, it's done like 180% over the last 10 years. And it holds 7,600 stocks around the world. Yeah. In one buy, you're buying 7,000. And most of those are like, and they've taken a massive hit, actually. But you can see how good that stable that is. A lot of those stocks are like Apple. And even those companies, taking a massive hit. Apple, like, and all that is phenomenal. So there's lots of opportunity out there for quality companies. Now, if you look at, like, even Apple's hit a 52-week low 2 days ago. Google, Amazon, all that. I said, I was talking to Paul Hill, actually, about, you know, Monty and Fred. I've stopped doing them for a while because we're in a downtrend, but doing a podcast, and they hold American stocks. And I give you a list of stocks now, boys. I don't know if you listened to me and Paul Hill, but basically, of these stocks, tell me which ones you think have held up and which ones have not, okay? These are the ones they hold. So, I'll go alphabetically. Here we go. So Apple, Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, Costco, Disney, Google, McDonald's, Microsoft, Philip Morris, Tesla. So of those, four of them haven't really sold off. So if you go through Apple, Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, which is Warren Buffett's company, Costco, Disney, Google, and McDonald's, Microsoft, Philip Morris,
Costco,
Fags and Vapes, and Tesla.
McDonald's sold off.
Philip Morris and McDonald's haven't, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, right. So it's Costco. In fact, Berkshire Hathaway is hang on. and the big time has come down, just bounced back up. The best performer, pretty much, is McDonald's. They literally hit an all-time high. So there are companies, if you play, it's almost like a no-brainer when you think of it. I mean, I bought Fred at McDonald's, he went boxing the other day, and he got sparring, he did very well. So I said, what do you want to eat? He said, McDonald's. I was like, okay, well, so I went to McDonald's. And he got
every great champion of the world.
Yeah, but he got a full meal, right, plus, dessert, and a £6.50 or something. So then you realise, even in the cost of living squeeze, that's not, I mean, you can't do that every day, some people, but it's not hugely expensive. And even if you took the dessert there, it'd be less than £5, pretty much, you know? So,
what did he have for dessert?
I think he was had apple pie.
Oh, classic.
Yeah, but, so you realise when McDonald's, looking back, they've put their prices up by 20%, but it hasn't really affected them. Because it's like, it's 20%, 20 pence, isn't it, pretty much, it was 99 pence to 120 for a cheeseburger or something. And, so people say, and because Berkshire Hathaway is invested in a lot of companies. Costco, of course, retailers, discount sort of thing. And then you've got Philip Morris. Monty picked that because he did say, who does vapes? He said, all the kids are doing vapes. So Philip Morris, fags and vapes. In a downturn, people tend to smoke a bit more because they're like, I'm going to stop eating so much, but I'll smoke the same. So it's almost like
£15 a packet of cigarettes now.
I know. My brother said that. My brother said,
I saw the price over the guy's shoulder in the newsagent. I was like, what? How can anyone afford that every day? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
£15 times. That's 105 quid a week.
105 quid, yeah.
So times four, right? 420. If you put £420 a week, stop smoking, just put it into the life strategy fund. And you'd be doing well.
Invest in Philip Morris. There you go.
Yeah. Exactly. Rather than they pay a dividend, I think. So rather than him take it off you take it off him. Philip Morris.
I used to go to school with Phil Morris.
Yeah, he's doing quite well. Was he a big smoker?
Not at all. No, he was on the rugby team. He was.
He's a sellum. He's a say, guys, you want to try these? They're quite good. But hang on, let me just a crossover. So how much of the portfolio do you have, Pete and Pad, in funds? Do you have any in funds?
Zero.
Yeah, 20%.
Okay, zero. Okay, well, why is that, Pad? You've never gone into a fund, have you?
No, I had a fund. You told me to sell it and invest in stocks.
Oh, yeah. Good advice, oops. To be honest with you, I did the same. So, but of course, what you need, I mean, going forward, I did say, before we had this big summer, we did rally, we just sold at the wrong time, pretty much. So we did, at the time, it was a good idea, but again, it's just timing, isn't it, the market? And people say you can't time the market. You can, pretty much. You know, it's not, if you just stick to the moving average, you can. And don't get carried away with stocks, don't get emotionally involved with stocks. But also, that's another thing. When you are overly exposed to a company, you are overly emotional with a company. And everything else, it's almost like you have confirmation bias on everything. If a bit of bad news comes out, that's good news. It's like, you see the Bitcoin people do this a lot. It doesn't matter what news comes out. No, but that's good news because, and there's kind of twisted logic as to why they got all their money in Bitcoin, you know? But no, you don't do that.
Steve was saying, it's frustrating when actually it was all balanced and then certain ones just go through the floor and then suddenly it's not balanced anymore.
Yeah. But if you held like 50% of the fund, you wouldn't see the volatility in your portfolio that much. And that's why I'm going to have like 20% in a fund now going forward. But I'll use that as a cash thing as well. As a little cash fund as well, because no one's sitting on cash. The fund's going up. You can put it in a fund, and it's very liquid. You can take it out of a fund.
Boys, I'm just posting you a YouTube video. There's a great video on a crypto, talking about crypto and Bitcoin. And this guy talking about how it's all a big scam. It's worth watching.
Yeah, there's a lot of
Some truth in
that,
I think.
Anyway, guys, I'll make a short one because I've got to go to take Monty for football training in the rain. So, we had one day yesterday, it was quite nice, raining non-stop, and it's horrible weather. What's going on? I do feel like moving abroad for 3 months of the year somewhere. I don't know. Anything else? Anything worth chatting about? Talking about on the TV? Anything like that? No. Have you done anything? Any observations? Stuff like that? Anything?
No.
Okay. No, very little actually.
I just discovered my son, 12-year-old son Steve, is into Wednesday.
Oh really? Is it suitable?
That's Steve. Have you watched it yet?
Let me see. He's 12. See.
I know loads of people who watched it at my age and thinks it's brilliant. So, like, don't judge it until you've watched it.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Actually, I say that. Justin, you'll hate it.
Oh, yeah, well, okay. One recommendation. Phenomenal now on Netflix. You've probably seen it advertised if you watch CNBC or watch anything. But Bernie Madoff, the biggest Ponzi scheme ever.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal. Honestly, watch it, because it starts a bit slow, I thought. There are times where he wasn't regulated. The SEC, which is like the FCA over here, investigated him in 1992, right, because he was sucking a lot of money in. First of all, they went in there and they said, we want to see these trades you're doing. I said, by the way, how much money have you invested? They were expecting to say 3, 4, 5 million. I said, oh, 444 million. This was in 1992. I said, 444 million? So they said, can we just check the trades? Yeah, we'll send you the trades over. So all he did, right, was look at previous trades that had gone through the stock exchange and claimed them. So, for example, let's say Amazon, someone bought, you know, 1 million quid of Amazon a month ago, and it'd gone up by 20%. He would send out, you know, letters to his investors, say, we bought Amazon a month ago. They didn't. So he was showing them constant gains all the time. And at the end, when actually there are two floors in this office building. One was like 19th floor, one was 17th floor. And the 19th floor was very nice, you know, nice computers. The 17th floor was full of boxes, full of stuff, paper, and old printers and all this stuff. And when they actually busted it, they went in there. This guy looked down at the piece of paper and said, okay, they got, it's just written on a bit of cardboard, was this number 4.7 million. He said, oh, it's not, okay. And he looked again, he said, oh, hang on, that's 4.5 billion. Uh-oh. And they realised, back in 1992, the SEC cleared him. He didn't even have a licence to trade. They went, hang on, if the main guys of the SEC had cleared him, and people had put all their money into it. So it's worth watching Madoff's Millions, I think it's called, or Billions on Netflix. But he's called Bernie Madoff. Madoff with your money. It's phenomenal, Madoff, that, isn't it? Madoff. So you couldn't get, even if you named the guy, if someone made him up, it would like a perfect name. But check that out, Bernie Madoff. If it's too good to be true, it normally is, let's be honest. He was giving everyone like 15% return. The normal sort of term was like 8, 7, 8%. And people say, don't worry, don't ask any questions, he's doing it.
Trust Bernie.
Yeah, if you try to redeem your money, though, he'd say, listen, if you want to take your money, I'll give you a cheque, never come back to me. And then, no, okay, if you're in 15%, it's fine. So you just send him statements every 3 months saying, another 15%, you know, and they never took any money out. But worth watching that. Right, gotta go, boys. Gotta stand in the rain for an hour and a half now.
Enjoy, man, sounds great.
Nice. Bye-bye.
Bye. Cheers, guys. Bye.
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 The Share Pickers Weekend Podcast with Justin, Paddy, Peter and Steve. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. People in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.